is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish Home Machine, which is perfect for these crazy times when gyms and schools are closed. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Kyle Cavanaugh from Essential Coaching, and you're listening to the Hoopheads Podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering new subscribers 10% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code SAVE10 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its play bank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball.
The culture of toughness didn't start the first day of practice. It had started in July. We had talked about this is who we want to be. These are our objectives. These are our non-negotiables in the culture of toughness.
Bobby Jordan just completed his second season as an assistant coach with the Wagner College Seahawks men's basketball program after joining the team in June of 2019. Following his playing career at Drexel, Jordan became a part of the Dragons coaching staff, first as an operations assistant for 2 years and then as an assistant coach for 3 seasons. Jordan came to Wagner following 1 season at the prestigious IMG Academy as head basketball coach. He led the Ascenders to a 26-4 record and saw 4 players sign with Division I schools, along with 5 others signing on to play college basketball. Prior to IMG, Jordan served as head coach at Philadelphia area prep school Girard College, where he guided them to a 23-6 record as 3 of his players went on to sign with Division I schools. If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Our roster of shows is growing, so don't forget to check out all our other podcasts on the Hoopheads Pod Network, including Thrive with Trevor Huffman, Beyond the Ball, the CoachMaze.com podcast, Players Court, Bleachers and Boards, The Green Light, Courtside Culture, and our team-focused NBA pods, Cavalier Central, Knuck If You Buck, 305 Culture, Hashtag Lakers, Motor City Hoops, X's and O's NBA Breakdown, Spanning the Spurs, LA Hoops, The Wizards Hoops Analyst, Lakers Fast Break, and At the Buzzer. We're looking for more NBA podcasters interested in hosting their own show centered on a particular team. Email us info@hoopheadspod.com if you're interested in learning more and bringing your talent to our network. Grab pen and paper before you listen to this episode with Bobby Jordan, men's basketball assistant coach at Wagner College in Staten Island, New York. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here without my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight, who is still down in Disney World for spring break. So Jason is hanging out while I am back here plugging away at the podcast. And tonight we are pleased to welcome back to the Hoopheads Pod Bobby Jordan, who is currently an assistant coach at Wagner College. The last time we talked to Bobby, he was at IMG. Bobby, welcome back to the Hoopheads Pod.
Mike, thanks a lot for having me back on. I feel honored to be a repeat guest right now on the Hoopheads pod.
That's it, man. You've joined an exclusive club. I'm going to have to go back and see how many repeat guests we've had. It's not a huge list. So we are glad that you are one of our repeaters. You've been one of our most loyal supporters from the very first time that you came on the show. And that's one of the things that we really have come to appreciate about the coaching community is just how much support there has been out there for what we're trying to do and grow the game and give coaches a platform, not only to share their story, but hopefully for our audience to be able to learn something. And that's certainly what we hope to do with you tonight, is to be able to give you an opportunity to talk about your transition back from IMG Academy back into the college ranks with Wagner, talk a little bit about the unique situation that everybody across the country in the game of basketball went through dealing with COVID and figuring out how to navigate that. So we'll get into all of that. Want to start out by just give us the quick story of how you leave IMG, how the opportunity at Wagner comes to pass, and then we'll dive right into the experiences that you've had there.
Yeah, well, I mean, it came about actually pretty quickly while I was down at IMG. I was there for pretty much a year, pretty much from June to June, and we had finished up our season. We finished up around the same time college does in March, and we were kind of going into our off-season training, end of April, early May. And I got a call from one of my former teammates at Drexel, Bashir Mason, who's our head coach. And he had an opening on his staff. And he wanted to, go through an interview process and, bring in a couple guys, as well as myself, that he was thinking about for the position. So I went up to New York, kind of saw the Wagner campus, met a lot of the administration, met with a couple of the guys on staff, most of which I was already familiar with, but it was a chance to kind of sit down with them in a more, unique environment, going through an interview process and get to know them a little bit better, and they can get to know me a little bit better. And as that process went on, Bashir called me one night. I was down in Florida at the time, and offered me the chance to join the staff at Wagner. And it was a great opportunity to, one, go back with family, go to work for a guy who I've played with in college, who I respect, and also to go work at an unbelievable place in Wagner College, where they've had a lot of success on the court, off the court, and as a college as a whole.
So when you go into that interview process, what are some questions that you have in mind when you're thinking about making that jump back? Do you remember a specific thing or two that you asked of them? I think people always ask the question, well, what did they ask you? I'm always curious, what did you ask them? What were some things that you wanted to know more about before you could really determine whether or not this was the right place for you? Obviously, you had a previous relationship with Coach Mason, but just talk to me a little bit about what some of the things were that you wanted to know more about before you committed.
Yeah, I mean, for me, one of the questions that I was big on asking was, the culture of the team, the culture of the staff, the culture of the athletic department, because coming from a place like IMG, the one thing that I loved was, just the culture around our staff that we had there. How everybody worked well together. So that was one of the biggest questions I had was, what was the culture like at Wagner? What were they about? And what were they looking to do in the future?
What was the answer that they gave you that made you feel like, hey, this is the right place for me? What was the answer that you were looking for? What was the answer that they gave you that convinced you that, hey, this is going to be a good place for me?
I think the best thing was, the family atmosphere that they have there. It's a small college in terms of size, and a really connected athletic department in terms of the administration and the coaches. It's not a place where half the department is in one building, half the department is in another building. We kind of all operate out of the Spiro Center, so you get that family atmosphere. That's something that I was used to. People just really connected and not only care about each other in a professional way, but care about each other in a personal way as well. Just, asking how your family's doing, how your kids are doing. That type of stuff is really important to me.
Did you feel like heading back to the Northeast, kind of like to your roots, was that important to you in any way?
Yeah, that was really important to me as well. You know, the weather's a lot nicer down in Florida. I know that. I experienced that this year where we first got our first taste of snow. I hadn't had that in a while because actually my first year back, we didn't get any snow. So had a real taste of that this year. But yeah, getting back to the Northeast, you know, I have two young daughters, 3.5 and 2.5 years old. Chance for them to be near their family, their grandparents. My wife is from the Northeast. You know, so that was a big deal for us as a family, was kind of getting back closer to home. Although we loved our time down in Florida, there's nothing like being closer to home.
All right, talk about navigating being a coach with the responsibilities that you have at the Division I level, balancing that with your family, because I know that's one of the things that I think coaches at every level have to figure out how to navigate that, how to be a great husband, how to be a great father, and still be a great coach and put in the kind of time that we all know is required in order to have success. So talk a little bit about what that's been like for you and your wife and your daughters.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the biggest things is just communication, just having a direct line of communication with your family on really like what's going on in your program. You know, when practices, when games are coming up, when you're going to be away on road trips. You know, it was a little different this year. We couldn't really go out and recruit. We're watching more stuff on film. You know, I have to watch this live feed of a game coming up. You know, really being in communication with that. And then also just time management. Really just, you know, when you're home and your kids are coming home from school or you just pick them up from school, just being present in the moment with them. Not being attached to your phone, kind of putting that away for a little bit, and then saving those calls or, you know, reviewing that film at maybe a later time in the night when they're already in bed and you can kind of sit down and get some more work done. So I think it's really just being present in the moment when you're with them.
Is that easier or hard for you?
It's easy for me. My kids are great sleepers. They go to bed around 8 o'clock every night. So, you know, it can get stressful at times during certain times of the year, you know, when maybe the recruiting's picking up or, you know, you got a road trip coming up and you're preparing for games, you know, so that can be a struggle. It's always on your mind. You never let it go. But we really just got to work hard to kind of be with them during those times.
All right. So you mentioned recruiting. Let's talk a little bit about what recruiting looks like during this period of COVID and how it's been different and how it's been challenging and just how you're going about it day to day. What does recruiting look like maybe compared to what it looks like normally for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of positives and negatives to kind of this new norm in recruiting. On the positive side, you know, I feel like from a time management standpoint, you can kind of see more prospects on a given day than you might during the course of the season. You know, normally, you know, in a normal year, a practice ends or a game ends and you can rush off to go see one game. Now you can kind of see as many games as possible in a day with, you know, high school coaches have done a great job of, you know, the ones that have been playing of sending their games out on Huddle, you know, or any other type of, you know, video source that they use, you know, so you can watch a multiple number of games in a day that you might not have been able to do in a regular year. So it really kind of helps from a time perspective in being able to see more prospects in a given week than normal. On the negative side, you know, it's really, I think, beneficial for coaches to see players live because not only do you, on film, you can't see what goes on before the game. How do they interact with the team? How do they really interact with the coach? You can't see those little things on film that you can when you go to a game live. You know, also when you go to a game live, you can kind of see maybe how do they interact with their parents during the game? Is there something there that might be a warning sign? So that's kind of one of the negatives of not being able to kind of go out live and see somebody. Everything now is kind of either on film or, you know, we do virtual visits on Zoom. So it's kind of taken out, I think, the personal touch that you get a lot of the times when we're able to get out on the road and go see guys live.
What will stay once this whole thing passes? In other words, do you think it'll be more of a hybrid model than it was in the past in terms of you're still obviously going to want to get out and see players in person, but do you think that it'll be more acceptance, or do you think it's going to be easier to maybe evaluate a player on film because you've been doing it so much more than maybe it was in the past?
Yeah, you know, I'll be interested to see if the calendar changes in a different way. If certain periods of the year now become dead, mainly during our season, you know, especially early on, I'm thinking in, you know, those November, December, when you're kind of in your non-conference, you know, because you're kind of scattered all over the place a lot of the times and traveling a lot anyway in the non-conference, like, do those periods become dead now? You know, other than that, I don't think any serious changes will be made. I think what this has done, though, is it has helped high school coaches, AAU coaches, to really realize the importance of promoting their players to schools and kind of reaching out to colleges to get tapes out. You know, I think a lot of coaches around the country have done a great job of getting the word out about their guys, especially the high school guys, this year, because it's been such a tough year for them. But I think coaches have just gone above and beyond doing that this year for their kids, and I hope that stays.
What's your best advice for, let's say, a high school coach who has a player, has the potential to play at the Division I level or any college level? What's the best way for a high school coach, in your mind, to reach out to a program that they think might be a good fit for their player? How should they go about reaching out to a coaching staff?
Yeah, I think the first thing is kind of look at your region, because I think that's another way that kind of this whole pandemic has changed in recruiting. I think you're starting to see a lot more kids stay within their region, stay within a 2 to 3 hour drive of their home, more so than it has been in the past. A lot of that could be, you know, relationship based, and not being able to go get on a plane and visit schools or get an official visit paid to visit somewhere. So first I would look at the schools in your region first, because those are the schools that are going to know you the best, and they're going to have an idea of who your guys are the best. For instance, you know, it doesn't necessarily benefit a kid living in, let's just say, Oklahoma for their coach to reach out to somebody in Pennsylvania. You know, I know you want to get his film out to as many, you know, schools as possible, but you know, it's going to be really hard for us to even know you or know of that kid if we've never recruited that area before. So I think it's best to kind of stay in that 2-3 hour radius and go all scholarship levels. The way this has kind of changed is everybody's D1, D1, D1. Now with the transfer portal being what it is, players being able to get an extra year of eligibility, I think coaches need to, you know, basically explain to parents and players that they need to be open to any type of scholarship level at this point, just because of how everything has kind of changed in the recruiting landscape.
All right, two questions there. First, when a high school coach first reaches out to you, would you rather hear from them with a phone call? Would you rather get an email from them? Would you rather have them send you whatever, the link, the huddle link? What's the best first method of contact for a high school coach if they're trying to get you to look at one of their players?
Yeah, I think
kind of for me, I would say either email or social media, actually, and kind of give a highlight tape first, because that kind of gives me an idea of who the guy is and kind of how he plays. And then usually, you know, I'll look at that highlight tape and then, you know, I'll reach out to the coach and say, listen, can you send me 2 or 3 games of the guy? And then, you know, I probably want to watch a couple games and then jump on a phone call with them, kind of get to know the player a little bit more, get to know his family a little bit more, get to ask the coach what they think of him. So kind of reaching out with that initial contact with maybe a highlight tape to kind of get the ball rolling through email or even social media, I think is a good way to kind of get the attention of a coach right away.
And how do you, as a college coach, how do you build relationships with the high school coaches in your region so that when they do have a player that fits at your level, that could be a good fit, that they keep Wagner top of mind? What are you guys doing as a staff to build those relationships day in, day out with the high school coaches in your area?
Yeah, I mean, for us, being in New York, the other three guys on our staff have all played for, great programs in New Jersey and St. Benedict, St. Anthony's, and St. Pat's. Those guys do an unbelievable job of keeping relationships in the New Jersey area. Me being from Philadelphia, just keeping those contacts and even doing it when those guys don't have a player. For example, John Moskow, who's the head coach of Archbishop Wood, Philadelphia Catholic League champs this year. We're not recruiting any of his players, but I talk to John at least once every 2 weeks to kind of just check in on him, see how he's doing more so than anything else, see how his family's doing, and then kind of asking about his program, like, how you guys doing? What are you guys doing, in the off season? What are you doing for the summer? And a lot of the times guys will ask you questions of, what's going to go on with recruiting? What's the calendar going to look like? If they have a player who is maybe going to the Big East, like, well, what do you think of him? Do you think he'll be okay there? So really just talking to those coaches when, you really don't need to recruit one of their players, I think is the biggest way to kind of develop your relationship with them.
Do you talk to those coaches at all ever about kids that they're playing against that you might be recruiting? So again, you have somebody that has been an opponent of a player that you're recruiting. I would think that you could probably get a pretty good feel for a kid from an opposing coach who has a lot less incentive to be, I don't want to say dishonest, but isn't going to maybe exaggerate the good qualities of a player, but is going to maybe give you a more honest opinion of what that player is that they're competing against. You ever get an opportunity to do that? Do you guys utilize that as a tool to help you in recruiting?
All the time.
All the time. I think it's great to go and ask, a coach in that league, about a guy. It's, there's tons of, scouts in the northeast area of the country who we kind of, will ask as well, because they go out and see a lot of games and they'll give you an unbiased opinion as well. We all want to support our players and, we all want them to be great. But I think it's very beneficial for us as a college coach to kind of ask other people of what they think of a potential prospect.
What is the impact in your mind, and maybe you can address this on a bigger college basketball wide scale and then maybe address it specifically to your situation at Wagner, with the extra year of eligibility and the way the transfer rules are changing, what is the impact you think across the college basketball landscape, and then what is it specifically to Wagner in your mind? What are these changes going to mean in real life?
Yeah, I think the biggest impact that this year of extra eligibility will have on, players in this 2021 class, whether it be high school, junior college, or even transfers, is now it becomes a numbers game. Obviously we're limited to the certain amount of scholarships that we can give out per year. And now if you're a school that went into the year maybe with five seniors and you have four coming back, now that was four less scholarships you're going to give out now to the 2021 class. Now things can change and you can have guys go into the portal and, that might free up some scholarships, but, really what this did was it kind of made a lot of teams, the biggest thing in college is, stay old, get old, stay old. I think that's one of Notre Dame's philosophies in the ACC. And that's really what this kind of extra year of eligibility has kind of done for some teams, is to allow them to stay old. For us, it kind of, becomes a roster management thing now. You got to look at, how many scholarships with guys coming back are you going to have for the 2022 class? even looking into 2023, because now really what this has done is it's kind of shaken up a lot of rosters throughout the country of, programs that thought they might be losing guys. But now they're having those guys back for another year.
Yeah, I got to imagine that it's difficult all the way around. I mean, it's difficult for you guys to kind of manage, and you're clearly have to have conversations with your guys who are kind of fitting into this extra year slot. And then it's got to be tough for those kids who are high school kids that are coming out and they're thinking, hey, we got whatever X number of scholarships are going to be available across the country because guys are graduating. And now all of a sudden those kids have an opportunity to come back, which you completely understand why. I mean, you completely understand why that was done. And yet, if you're a high school kid and you're a senior at this point, you got to be sitting there thinking, going, man, I was born in the wrong year because my opportunities just aren't as wide. And I think it'll be interesting to see just what those ramifications are for all the kids. And maybe it ends up that some of the lower levels end up getting players that might have been D1 players, might end up going D2 or might end up NAI, or maybe they even slip down to Division 3 simply because the opportunities that might have been there previously at the Division 1 level simply aren't there because some of the current players are taking advantage of the opportunity to take that extra year.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's going to, I think, strengthen a lot of, teams at the low major level, the mid major level. They're going to be probably more experienced next year than they have been in the past. And it should for sure help them. And you're also going to see, like you said, a trickle-down effect to Division II because, as we can see, there's over 1,200 kids in the transfer portal. And, a lot of those guys will wind up not staying D1, and they'll have to go D2. So hopefully it can strengthen, the Division II and Division III and the NAIA ranks as well.
What's your take on how the loosening of those transfer rules, what's your take on how that impacts – let's just stay with the Division I level. How does that impact high major schools and how they recruit? How does that impact schools that are maybe at the mid-major level? Just give us an idea of how you think this is going to play out with the transfer rules changing and allowing kids to have to be able to go without having to sit out a year. How do you think it impacts the different levels within Division I?
Yeah, I mean, I think it... one of the biggest things that it's going to do is, you're going to see the numbers that are in the portal this year. I think you're going to see that continue. And the biggest thing that I think you're seeing is what has been happening for a couple years is guys kind of moving up levels, but you're also seeing guys move down levels as well. So I think there's a little give and take with that between, high major level, mid major level, and low major level. As you're seeing, it went to that high mid major level, now are transferring down. And there's guys that are transferring up. I think it gives kids the opportunity to, kind of chase their dreams and, do what's best for what they think is right for them. And I think they should be afforded that opportunity. And I think you'll kind of see a lot of the same patterns that we've seen recently. Now it might get magnified a little bit just because of the rule being put in place, and the numbers might go up a little bit, but kind of what we've been seeing the past couple years in guys transferring up or grad transfers, I don't think there will be much change in that besides, kind of just a little increase in numbers.
Hey coaches, parents, and group leaders, I want to introduce you to our newest sponsor, SnapRaise. SnapRaise is the nation's largest digital donation platform built to help teams, youth groups, and clubs raise money quickly and efficiently without selling products. SnapRaise builds your group a customizable campaign website, and students use their mobile devices to connect and engage with their biggest fans. My son's high school team used SnapRaise this season, and our team raised all the money they needed to fund their season, and then some. Getting SnapRaise started is quick and free. Just visit SnapRaise.com, and you'll get connected to a local SnapRaise expert in no time. So any adaptations that you guys have to make as a coaching staff, or it's pretty much you've kind of been living under this system to some degree for the past couple of years – and you're just going to continue to do what you do and continue to work hard at recruiting. Is there anything that you're going to adjust as a result of this, or it's just kind of, hey, we're going to keep plugging along and do what we do?
Keep plugging along and do what you do. And, you know, it's really about, you know, the culture of your program, the relationships that you have with your players in your program. I think that can't take a back seat to, you know, recruiting the next class. That's always important. It's always important to, you know, look ahead in recruiting and who's not in your program, but it's also important to, you know, recruit the young guys in your program. And their experience and the relationships that you have with them. I think that becomes, it's always important. I think it becomes a little bit more important even now with this rule change. But that's the biggest thing that we've kind of heard from kids that are looking to transfer is, you know, I want a good culture. I want to have a good relationship with not just one coach on the staff. I want to have a good relationship with every coach on the staff. So that's, I think, some of the things that you'll kind of see staffs make adjustments on in the next couple of years.
All right. So that being said, how do you guys at Wagner go about building those kinds of relationships with the kids that are in your program? And clearly this year was not a normal year. So maybe let's just talk about what you guys did this year where it's maybe a little bit more challenging to be able to build the kind of relationships that you'd like to and spend as much time in direct contact with your guys. And clearly you guys were able to have a season and a very successful one at that, but still there were challenges that you've never faced before. So how did you guys go about making sure that you kept your team together and that you built the types of relationships that are required in order for you to keep those kids a part of your program and keep building on the success that you currently have had?
Just kind of going back to culture, we kind of changed our mantra this year. And one of the things we always talked about was that has to be preached every day. And that also has to be preached every day, not only on the court, but off the court. So I think just being transparent with your guys, holding everybody accountable for the same things on and off the court is extremely important. You know, you obviously don't want to, you know, let things go from one player that you won't let go from another player. You know, so really just having that transparency of this is how we operate. You know, I think that's big for kids, and that kind of builds that relationship because now they know they can trust you. They can trust everybody on staff that we're all on the same page. We're all looking to go to the same place, and we're all looking to achieve the same goals together. You know, so just keeping that, you know, culture every single day, day in and day out, you know, I think that really helps with the trust, the building of trust with your players and your staff.
So do you build that out initially and have a discussion with the team sort of about those standards, that accountability, and then you build on it day by day over the course of the season where they come to trust you? In other words, is there something, a team meeting, an idea where you're going through with everybody and saying, look, here's the kind of team we want to be. Here's our expectations. You're getting buy-in from all of them. And then over the course of the season, you're continuing to build on those things every day by building up the trust. I mean, is that how it works?
You know, kind of like you talked about with the weird COVID year, we kind of started this in the summer. You know, coach kind of introduced this culture of toughness that we were going to have. And we talked about it. We talked about it every week. You know, we had guests come on that talked about toughness, like Jay Billis. Fran Fraschilla talked to our team about the tough times that you're going to go through during the season. And those were beneficial to our guys, I thought, throughout the year. And those were things that we could touch back upon during the season. So really, it didn't start, you know, the culture of toughness didn't start the first day of practice. It had started in July. We had talked about this is who we want to be. These are our objectives. These are our non-negotiables in the culture of toughness. And we need guys to follow this, not only on the court, but off the court as well. Like I talked about, just what we do every day, what we do every day on campus, how we approach, you know, academics, how we approach how we're acting in the dorms, everything, how we approach, how we interact with other people on campus. That goes into not just only helping your team, keep that culture going, but it also pretty much allows your team to get a feel of how you're going to operate on the court as well. And that was kind of really a big thing for us, was, those meetings that we had in the summer to kind of lay the foundation for our culture of toughness.
So before you meet with the players, why toughness? What was the process like behind the scenes with you guys as a coaching staff coming up with toughness as being the guide word that was going to take you through the season and allow your kids to have that roadmap for the type of success you wanted to have?
I might have to cut this one out, Mike. This is a tough one for me to answer. Because I can't really answer this one. Because to be honest, like Coach came up with it, he was a tough player himself, and I think he just thought we, the year before, that
might have been what was lacking.
Yeah.
Gotcha. That makes complete sense. I'm always just curious again when you think about, and as I'm talking to coaches on the podcast, and you hear them share different standards, and there's some that get repeated, and then there's other ones that are kind of outliers that you haven't heard before. And I'm always curious about just where, what the process is. Like, how does a coach come up with, these are my four things, or this is my one thing for this season that's going to be the most important that I'm going to focus on? And I do think that each individual coaching staff or each individual head coach, you have things that you value, and then you're also looking at your personnel and saying, what types of things do I want to encourage our players to do that is going to help us to have the most success? And so when that's why I'm always curious about sort of the process behind that. So when you think about toughness, how do you go about recognizing that? In other words, what behaviors are you telling the players that you want to see from them? How are you praising them when they exhibit toughness? What does that process look like? Because you can easily throw a word up on a bulletin board and you can say, hey, we got to be tougher. But if the players don't understand exactly how that translates into what they do on the practice floor, what they do in a game, or what they do in the classroom, or what they do in the community, then it becomes just a buzzword and it really doesn't have an impact. So what did you guys look for and praise when you saw from your players in any of those settings that I mentioned?
Kind of talked about was, one of our key things was empty your tank. Just every single day, empty your tank, whether it's in the weight room, whether it's in practice, obviously during the games, just give everything you have, go all out, play hard. We want to be known as one of the toughest teams in the league. From a defensive standpoint, from a rebounding standpoint, hustle plays. We did a toughness chart during practice. We would have like toughness plays of the week during the preseason, just to kind of emphasize like this is what we're looking for. It could be simple as just telling somebody they threw you a good pass. That's tough. That's tough to have the wherewithal to tell one of your teammates in practice that they threw a good pass and point to them. Those are little things that teams really, kind of lack at times, or you see that happen on good teams. You don't see that happen on bad teams. And then the obvious things, taking charges, diving for loose balls. We want to win every 50-50 battle, every game. Those are kind of just some of the tough things we talk about. And then just, kind of just preaching that word every single day. If we're in the huddle and it's kind of like an emotional meeting and a guy saying something kind of personal to himself or about something else, just follow that up with that was tough. That kind of just gets in their mind that it's okay to share what you're feeling during certain times too, because that's part of toughness.
Yeah, I think toughness is a word that can encompass so much when you think about, I think typically when you hear it, you think physical toughness. That's the first thing that comes to my mind when I hear that word of toughness, is just being physically tough. So that's taking the charge. That's diving for a loose ball. That's being willing to play man-to-man defense and taking pride in stopping your player and being willing to help and all the, just the physical piece of it. And then I think there's obviously there's mental toughness and being able to step to the free throw line and make free throws in big moments, or being a guy that wants the ball in critical situations. And then I think what you just described is just having that personal toughness sort of in terms of your interpersonal relationships and being able to have difficult conversations, which is difficult sometimes for us as adults to be able to confront somebody. And then you start talking about trying to get your kids to be better leaders, and you're talking about an 18, 19, 20-year-old kid, and you want them to step up and sort of demand or, you know, encourage their teammates to be the type of teammate that they want them to be and to put forth the kind of effort that you need them to have. And that's tough. That's really tough to do as a player, to have those kinds of interactions with your peers. And so I think when you talk toughness, you're talking about something that goes a long way, and there's a lot of different avenues that you guys can take it. You mentioned about kind of tracking that stuff in practice. When you're tracking that, what does that look like in terms of responsibility for who's writing that stuff down? Is that a manager's job? Is that one of the assistant coaches? How are you guys, do you chart it after the fact, like during, while you're watching film or practice? What's the process look like?
During practice, you know, a manager kind of, you know, tough talk, we would call it, like I talked about, kind of, you know, if you're, you know, you get a nice assist and you're rewarding the guy who threw you the pass, you know, kind of just talking to them, that's considered tough talk. You know, if a guy takes a charge, we're big on everybody running to pick him up, touch him, you know, whether it be a pound, you know, a handshake, whatever, you know, little things like that, diving for loose balls, that's charted, offensive rebounds, you know, basically tough plays, but also like we talked about, tough talk. You know, but that could be in a huddle where, you know, we're doing a situation and you're down. How's the huddle interacting? How's the, you know, is it positive energy that's coming out of that huddle that they're going to come back? Or is it negative energy, guys with bad body language? You know, those are certain things you look for, you know, on the chart.
Do you guys have, how are the responsibilities broken up amongst you guys on the staff in terms of what you're watching for, what you're looking for? Is everybody kind of coaching everything, or do you have it broken up where you have a guy who's watching offense, a guy who's watching defense, somebody who's specifically dialed into those toughness plays? How do you guys go about dividing up sort of the roles
in a practice setting? You know, we're kind of just all on the same page, all the coaches watching, you know, everything that's going on. You know, the things that we divide up are kind of positional based, just in terms of, you know, the breakdown before practice, individual skill work, player development, you know, all that stuff is broken down. But really, you know, during practice, everybody on the same page, same voice, same message, and really just preaching our culture every single day.
All right, let's get into some COVID changes, things you had to adjust this season. Let's start with practice itself. How was practice different in this COVID era than it was typically, you know, in a normal season?
And one of the things we actually heard from our players this year, in terms of practice, was, you know, we had to be tested 3 times a week, you know, for COVID. So those days that, you know, we're going in for practice and it's a testing day, you know, our guy said to us, like, coach, one of the hardest parts was we would be going into practice or walking to the gym, and we would never even know if we were going to have practice that day. And that was just because you just never knew. You never knew if, you know, somebody was going to test positive or anything. You know, so that was really difficult. You realize kind of the mental part that guys went through in terms of that. If every time we were having a testing day, of they didn't even know if they were going to be practicing, you know, that day. And then if something, you know, happened, they wouldn't be probably practicing for another at least 2 weeks. You know, so that's one of the difficult things we went through. You know, early on, kind of just the protocols of guys having to wear a mask during practice. You know, I know that was very difficult for the players. Now that eventually, you know, stopped. Us as coaches having to wear masks at all times. This year was a little different, just in terms of a practice setting. But the biggest thing was, I think, mentally for guys was, you know, were they going to practice that day? That's kind of the biggest sentiment that we heard from our guys throughout the year.
Was there anything you guys could do to mitigate that in terms of conversations that you were having with the kids?
We talked to them a ton about, you know, kind of staying safe. They really, to be honest, our guys did a great job all year. We were fortunate to not have a positive test in our program the entire year. So our guys did an unbelievable job of kind of staying laser focused on the year. They knew what they wanted to do, and they stayed the course with it. They didn't put themselves in any situations where, you know, anything possibly could happen. They were great about that, because the one big thing we saw all year was that first week of practice, just the joy the guys had on their face just to be back and kind of being able to play. And then obviously once you start the season and once you kind of get it going, you start getting on a roll and winning some games. Now it really gets flowing. And now it's like, all right, we're here now.
Yeah, that had to be, I'm sure, a thrill for your kids, because you go back to August, September of last fall, and I think there was some real concern amongst everybody at all levels of basketball whether or not there would be a season at all. I know my son is a freshman in high school, or was a freshman in high school this past season, and you know, you'd ask me back in September how many games I thought he was going to play, and I would have said that there was, you know, theoretically they could have played 22, and if you would have said, give me a number, is it more likely they're going to play 22 or is it more likely they're going to play zero? I think I would have definitely picked zero. And it ended up that they got an opportunity to play 22 games and play out their whole season. And so I think, like you said, everybody was just happy. Coaches, players were just thrilled to be able to be on the floor, because nobody knew whether or not that was going to happen. And I'm sure that for you guys as coaches too, just the opportunity to be back on the floor and coaching your kids had to be a thrill.
Hey, hoopheads, we all hate ankle sprains, and they happen way too often. Ankle injuries are the number one sports-related injury. Arise is trying to change that. With the iFast, your athletes get preventative protection and full mobility. Athletes no longer need to wear bulky braces that limit performance and give mediocre protection. Anyone playing sports should be using these products. Keep your athletes in the game. Don't wait for them to get hurt to take action. Visit www.arise.com/teampricing to learn more. That's ARYSE.com.
How about the travel situation? So I know that you guys played the two-game series within your league. And so talk a little bit about how that was different from what you're used to, just in terms of preparing as a coach for back-to-backs, which oftentimes as a college program, you're not, in a normal year, you're probably not playing any back-to-backs, maybe one or two a season. And then what the travel procedures were like when you guys went on the road and how that was different, just in terms of how you handled, again, keeping everybody distanced.
Sure.
And all
so
the things that go along
playing
with that.
You know, the back-to-back games was extremely difficult. Something that, you know, at first we kind of didn't think about how difficult it was actually going to be. Just in terms of, you know, you're not, if you're on the road, you're kind of staying put. It's not like you're going to another place to play another game. But really, just in terms of travel, so how our league is broken up, we had four home series, four away series, and then we had one series where we played one game at home, one game away, and that was against our closest opponent, which was Fairleigh Dickinson. So really on the road, it was very different in terms of we weren't able to shoot around. If you were at a road game, you couldn't do a shoot around. the day of the game. So that was kind of, different in a way. Now, we had some games where the time got moved up, where you really wouldn't have a shoot around that second day anyway. Just being in the hotel, really, our guys like to, hang out in the lobby and, stuff like that. When we were on the road in a normal year, they were kind of just had to stay in their room, came down for meal, came down when we were leaving, and that was it. So that was kind of a little different of really just being, in your room for the entire time you were on a road trip, was really different. Especially not being able to go to the gym either. So we didn't even get that release of being able to get away for, an hour, 2 hours, kind of just to go over to the gym and shoot around. So those procedures were really different. The difficulty of the back-to-backs in a way is just the recovery time. The recovery time of, playing a game 24 hours later. We had sometimes where we had less than 24 hours. We would play a 7 o'clock game. And then we play 4 o'clock the next day, so just really how you kind of got around that was, from a strength and conditioning standpoint, from a, a medical standpoint, just making sure your guys are getting the proper treatment the night after the game, ice baths, recovery boots, making sure they're getting the proper food in them. That became, I think, a little bit more magnified than it is in other years. Where you're really not thinking about that. Now, we handled the back-to-backs pretty well. I think we probably had the lead to be up there in the country in terms of the league teams that played back-to-back games in terms of sweeps this year, winning both games. So I think our guys handled that pretty well. Just the whole preparation around it was different. You got to make adjustments on the second day. The first game, you kind of have your scout. You know what you're going to do. And now it's, all right, we saw what happened. Now, what kind of adjustment are we going to make? What kind of adjustment do we think that they're going to make? Because the personnel and pretty much everything else in terms of scouting stays the same the second day, except now it's, what kind of adjustments are they going to make and what are we going to have to do as well?
What is that 20 hours or so in between the buzzer of the first game and the tip of the second game? What does that look like for you guys as a coaching staff? Are you, obviously you go through the entire game film and you're talking, but how much sleep are you getting? And what, what does that 20 hours look
really
like?
Really depending on the time of the game. So I believe our first series of the year, we played at 4 o'clock, the first game, and then 4 o'clock, the second game. So that kind of allowed the staff to kind of sit around, probably around 6:37. After we got back to the hotel and got dinner and kind of, review the tape as a staff, then bring the guys back down, to watch it and kind of talk about what we're going to do the next day. So the timing of the game was really important. The times where you played, a 7 o'clock at night game and then a 4 o'clock day game the next day, you're pretty much in the office to, midnight, 1 a.m. reviewing the film. And then you're going home and you're getting back up the next day and you're probably having like a midday, film session. If you're at home, you're doing a shoot around. So the timing of everything was kind of short and condensed, which really can kind of affect your preparation in a way with your team.
And how do you look at it with your team when you win the first game versus you lose the first game in terms of kind of their mental state and what you have to do as coaches to make sure that they're prepared to play that game the next day? Because one of the things that I would think, and just thinking back to my time as a player, so if I played that first game and I didn't play well, and then I had to go just sit in my hotel room by myself for the next whatever number of hours, like I think that would mentally be kind of difficult. And so I'm wondering if you experienced any of that with your players and if you had conversations with them. And conversely, if you win the first game and you're like, oh man, we got this, now we come back out and we feel pretty good that we beat them last night, we're going to just beat them again. So just talk maybe about how you handled it mentally with your kids to make sure they were prepared for that second game and that they weren't getting too high or too low.
That was definitely a thing that we saw a lot the second game. Like I said, we won the first game a lot of the times. So the second game for us kind of becomes, like you talked about, like a mental game. We want to make sure our guys aren't, you know, too satisfied with the win in a way. You know, whether, you know, we won by, I think one time we won by 30 the first game, and then we lost in double overtime the next game. So you want to make sure your guys don't get too high, too low. You know, luckily for us, we were competing for, you know, a regular season championship towards the end of the year. And that kind of was a, you know, a carrot to kind of hang over guys was, you know, how important this second game is, how important it is to get a sweep in these series. And really just focusing in on, you know, what made us successful in the first game. Why did we win the first game? And then how are we going to translate that again in the second game? Just really motivating them in that way to kind of get ready for that next day.
If you had to ask or think about what your players would say, what do you think they would say to you was the biggest challenge that they faced or the biggest struggle with the whole situation? Do you think it was that not knowing about coming into practice, or was there something else?
Like in terms of the games or just practices?
I think just overall in terms of COVID, what do you think was the most challenging part of it for the players? If you took a player survey, what kind of answers do you think you get back about what was the most challenging piece of it for them?
The challenge for these guys all year was just not having that normal college experience, that release that you get in a normal year of just being on a college campus. I know our semester stopped 2 weeks before Thanksgiving, and our guys and the women's team were the only basically people on campus, students on campus at the time, up until the end of February, start of March. You know, so that just that struggle, I think, for them of kind of just being there by themselves and, you know, pretty much, you know, counting the women's team, 30 students on campus. I think that was the struggle of not having the release of a normal college atmosphere for them. And I think, you know, like I said, credit to our guys who fought through that all year and had a lot of success with it. But I think that's what a lot of kids struggled with this year, was just not having that normal college experience that they've had.
Yeah, I mean, I can only imagine what that was like. I know when I played, we'd get the 2 weeks at Christmas time where all the students would be home. And my first 2 years when I wasn't living off campus, we actually moved out of our dorms and moved into a hotel. And you're talking about at that time we were doing, you know, two practices a day, and then you're just going back and sitting on a bed in a hotel room. And that was like, that drove me. I still remember that vividly, and that's 30 some odd years ago. So I'm sure for your kids that was definitely a challenge. Did you guys try to do more maybe team activities or getting guys together more than you did or more than you would under normal circumstances? Or was it just because, hey, we want to try to keep guys apart a little bit because of, again, social distancing and COVID thing? How did you guys handle that?
It was great from a player development standpoint, you know, with the kind of longer break in terms of, you know, school this year, is you were able to kind of get guys in for film a little bit more normally than you might not be able to in a normal year, get some more, you know, skill development in with them just because of, you know, the timing of everything. Just having a lot more time on your hands to be able to do these things. You know, so I think from a player development standpoint, it really helps guys out a lot. It allowed us to spend more time with our guys, and it allowed us to be around them a little bit more than normal. You know, just in terms of like with the school year ending early or with them, you know, maybe doing classes online, it kind of changed up a little bit of, you know, from a timing perspective of how much you can be around your guys.
What's something that you guys learned or did as a result of COVID that you feel like is going to stick around and become a part of what you do on a regular basis? Is there anything that you tried, that you learned, that you worked on this year that you did differently that you liked, woo, man, I like this. This is something that we're going to keep and it's going to stick around. It could be whatever, something that practice-wise, meeting, teams, whatever. Take that any direction you want, but just something that you guys learned or did during COVID that's going to stick around moving forward.
We kind of went into, like I said, a little bit more player development this year and kind of changed up our practice. You know, I would say not schedule, but kind of how we operate it from a practice standpoint. Just added more player development, more skill development stuff in the beginning. And I think that really helped us. I think that really helped us. It allowed guys to get better throughout the course of the year. You saw the guys becoming better shooters, guys, you know, being more, you know, sharp with the little things in terms of footwork. And I think it really helped our guys develop throughout the course of the year.
What's the biggest thing you're looking forward to, hopefully, when things return to normal, whether that be sometime later this summer or, fingers crossed, hopefully next fall, things are going to look a lot more normal. What's something that you're looking forward to returning that maybe you either didn't get to do or didn't get to do as much of this year as a result of COVID?
You know, in the past, we've been great with kind of getting our guys out with a lot more team activities, whether it be going to dinners together or, going to, an amusement park and guys riding go-karts and stuff like that and competing against each other. I think what this year did was it kind of took away a lot of those team bonding activities that you would normally do in a year. So I'm actually looking forward to get back to that a little bit more. I think it allows guys to really bond with each other, and kind of not be separated and secluded from one another, kind of like they were this year.
So obviously you guys had a really successful year this year, and you've built a really good foundation on what you have moving forward. So before we wrap up, give us an idea of what your team looks like, what you have coming back, and what you anticipate this summer on into the fall and then next season, what you guys are going to be able to put out on the floor.
The guys we have coming back for next year, starting with Alex Morales, who was the player of the year in our conference this year. He'll be returning, as well as Elijah Ford, who was a first-team all-league guy. Will Martinez, who I believe had an all-league season this year. We're also going to return the rookie of the year in Delonte Hunt, who was a freshman for us this year, who had an unbelievable freshman year. And also a couple guys that have been with us for a long time, and Nigel Jackson, who have really helped our program throughout his 4 years here. He'll be going into his fifth year. A couple guys that were looking to step up, guys that were, I guess, technically sophomores this year, but they really have 3 years left that can really step their game up next year and kind of take that next jump of their career. And then we're looking to add some pieces now just to the team. We have 4 open scholarships now, hoping to bring in some guys that can help us, not only win the regular season, but can help us get to that conference championship game and win that third game in March and hopefully propel us to the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, it'd be a lot of fun. Great tournament this year. I think everybody missed the tournament, not being there last year and then having it come back this season. Obviously, we had a lot of exciting NCAA tournament games as always, and Baylor's performance in that championship game, I think, was something that not necessarily surprising because of the talent that they have on that team and how well coached they are. But certainly, I think the result, I don't think anybody saw them doing that to Gonzaga, especially with the success that Gonzaga had over the course of the season. And if you guys could get your way in there and be able to have an opportunity to get and play on the big stage, for your kids, I'm sure that'd be tremendously exciting for you guys as a coaching staff. Anything else that we didn't hit on, Bobby, that you can think of in terms of COVID that you want to share with the listeners, things that you guys have done, learned, maybe just give us a quick wrap up on what the season, what the season meant to you guys and just being able to have it. And then I'll jump back in and we'll wrap things up.
Shout out to all the, student athletes throughout the country this year in terms of, those that played college basketball, the sacrifices that these kids had to make the sacrifices that their parents had to make, the sacrifices that, you know, the unsung heroes on coaching staff, such as, you know, your trainer, your strength coach, you know, your director of basketball operations, just the job that, you know, these kids and these people have done throughout the year, I think it's been great. You know, it's something that, you know, really should be, you know, recognized for their efforts as well, because there was a lot of sacrifice that went into this season, you know, both mentally and physically for a lot of people. And I just really appreciate everybody's efforts this year and looking forward to next year, like you said.
That's well said. Share how people can get in touch with you, how they can learn more about the program there at Wagner, and then I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
To kind of follow me on social media is with Twitter, at BobJordan1, and then also on you know, Wagner Athletics website. And I got to give a shout out to our hashtag toughness for the season.
Absolutely. Bobby, I cannot thank you enough for jumping back on as a two-time guest. We appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule to share with us what you guys went through and both the joys and the challenges that you guys faced this year, as we all did, anybody who was involved in a basketball season. And I think to be able to hear the story of what you guys went through and how you were able to adjust and still try to provide a great experience for your kids and just really have the kind of success that you guys were able to have. And as you mentioned, you got a lot of guys coming back that you're looking to build. And hopefully next year around this time, we'll see the Wagner Seahawks in the NCAA tournament. So Bobby, thanks so much tonight for jumping out with us. And to everyone out there, we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast presented by Head Start Basketball.